No matter where you walk, I would say the number one thing that earns you an ear is, ironically, having one. That's the answer.
Welcome to the PD podcast.
I'm on the bus. I made the RV.
Our goal, my goal personally, is really to advocate for next generation leaders. And it's really to help seasoned leaders, we call them seasoned leaders, mm-hmm. right? Leaders who have been at the wheel for a long time in ministry, mm-hmm. understand a common language, you know, to give them a translation from what the mission, vision, and core values are of, you know, every millennial stepping into big ministry. My two, maybe three questions will all line up into how have you, mm-hmm. with as many platforms as you've been given access to, mm-hmm. right? I think of like the Hume Women's stuff. I think of now the church that you're leading, Young Adult Ministry, mm-hmm. in. Are you a collaborative pastor? Are you doing that with somebody? Or is that solely your responsibility?
Solely my responsibility.
That's excellent. Yeah. And then you've also got like basically your whole brand. How have you, if you could articulate it, how have you kind of earned the ear of, you know, several seasoned pastors or seasoned leaders or seasoned ministry directors over the time that you've really started to become more of a, you know, circuiting leader? I guess that's a better question.
I'll say the biggest life skill I've learned, that especially when it comes to people who quote unquote are above you or further ahead of you, and also people in my, whether it's ministry leader or people in general, mm-hmm. or you walk into a party, which what parties do we go to? But no matter where you walk, I would say the number one thing that earns you an ear is, ironically, having one. That's the answer. So when I walk in, and there's a quote I heard a long, long time ago that my dad has at the bottom of his email signature. It says, be interested more than interesting. And so the minute I walk in with any leader, and for one, not care who they are, but walk up and but care who they are, ironically. So I don't know if that made any sense.
No, it does.
But it's walk up and then be obsessed with them, ask questions of them, really want to get to know them. And I took StrengthsFinder. My number one was what it was. My last one was empathy. So I recognized that was always going to be something to work on.
Like last on the
like
30th
strength.
List?
Yeah, it was the
last one. It
wasn't
like your bottom
one.
Five.
No. Which I think we should all look at our bottom five. I was just curious to find my least strength and then know that that was going to be an active place, which ironically, the strength space is like, live in your strengths, live in your strengths. And I was so curious what I wasn't naturally.
You're
and
saying
I'm not.
Bottom of the barrel is empathy for you?
It was. And so I recognized, yikes. So all that to say, and I see that it's so heavy with Jesus that I knew that that was the one thing I was going to grow in. So how did I earn an ear is by having one to every leader and then learning. A disciple is just a learner. So I feel like I come into everywhere hungry and to go like, I need you to understand the Lord better.
That's good.
And then I've watched, ironically, and this is weird, like, so you don't want to do it for the objective of getting something. But the weird part is doors have opened because people have recognized people can learn how to learn. They can't learn how to have all the answers.
You care.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, that sounds like such a simple answer, but I think that we get caught in a race of saying like, well, I got four other people chasing that same potential position or that opportunity. Yeah. I remember I'll share a mutual struggle with you because you have history in this place when Hume Lake was, when Eric Simpson, Eric usually watches the feed. So when Eric Simpson, E-Rock, the legend. Of high school programming, Ponderosa Camp, I remember this ball got tossed in the air and it was like, but who's going to replace him?
Yeah.
You know, and it was like they were searching around and I was kind of buried inside of like the Hume ecosystem doing these, you know, back hill off the mountain, not really in the limelight. People didn't know who I was. And I remember wrestling going like, oh, I wish I could just get that. But there's probably five amazing other people that would get it also. And Cliff Carey, one of the program directors there, an incredible seasoned leader, right? Gen X, definitely. He goes, you know, Mingo, every day that you chase that stupid platform is another day that your loving, very well-knowing you Savior is going to keep you from it. Because it'll be early disaster for you. Oh. It'll be early disaster.
It's so funny that you had that encounter with Cliff Carey. Cliff Carey, which if you know the guy, shoot him a text and just say hello. Because he impacted me with one random offshoot phrase. You know those really powerful phrases, but when people use them not as a powerful phrase, they just use it and then it is powerful. He said something to me once similarly. He gave you that line. My line was, show love, not importance.
Whoa.
And I was like, Cliff Carey, end quote. But and the best part is it was just normal conversation. And that for me is, and again, we all know when you preach, you want to put together like a a phrase that really gets them or whatever.
Something that people can.
Right. But when people just live like that, and Cliff Carey was one of those people for me. So I love that you had that. Don't chase after it. Just be.
Yeah, that's good. What do you. Okay, end that. End that note. Thank you for that.
Goodbye.
Yeah, end that note. The next one. What are you.
This is so cool. You should have a bus.
It's awesome. You can come on tour with us anytime. When and what do you see? Not when. What do you see when you hear the conversation? I just got done at Catalyst. We had all these roundtable leaders. Charles Stoyku.
Yeah, come on.
He teed up a ton of millennials for us. That'll be on the podcast also if you go catch that episode. But when you hear the word like millennials are leaving, like you write, you read the articles. Yeah. They show up everywhere. They're leaving the church. They're not interested. They're post-Christian. What's your reaction to that? Or what is your observation in that? And how are you as a young adult pastor, right? How are you leaning into that? And what are you seeing by way of trend? Yeah. Is all the hype true? Or are you having to put those fires out? I mean, give me your sense on the matter.
Man, it's such a big topic that I don't feel equipped to be able to answer it with any certainty or statistics or whatnot. Right. But I will just say that the thing I've found is that for some people, not all people, but for some people, it's good for them to leave for a season. The reason I say that is...
Wow, that's like, stop the presses.
Yeah.
That's not the typical answer you would hear from a shepherd of a generation.
The only reason I say it for two reasons. One, I prayed for a girl who left. And then when she came back, I think she understood prodigal son's story as the older brother more than she ever had before. The second reason is a friend of mine is homeschooling. And everyone has their thoughts on homeschool, whatnot. But there was a moment that he was talking through this incredible conversation he had with his daughter, who's being homeschooled. And she was sharing about, like, I just don't know. And she's young. I just don't know if I, like, why don't I want to pursue God? Why don't I want that? Just really cool from a 10-year-old, right? Yeah. And his response, and he gives this really profound blah, blah, blah. And I preached on that sermon because it was just so powerful. But the thing that made me think, which I found really interesting, was she is only in the home. And she actually has very little experience of life outside the church. Mm. She has very little experience with any non-Christians. Yeah. Now, I'm not saying that pro anti-homeschool, I'm not making any statements on that. But what I am saying, and it's so interesting, our conversation led him to bring her to more places where she could meet people who weren't like her to see why it is compelling to live for Christ, why their family and what they do around a table, which is a success story, is so different than anywhere else. And she didn't know there was a difference because she hadn't experienced
it. Like being in such a great family, not realizing, I mean, I feel like I have that story too, right? Where you just don't understand how much you're privy to or privileged with or the kind of love you experience. So you're saying with an entire generation, I'm going to try to link the dots here.
No, so everyone needs to leave and then come home and then run home and the father will run out for you.
I'll wrap my coat around you, right?
I'll put the ring on the finger.
Right, okay.
No, okay.
But what does that look like? Yeah. I mean, are you experiencing that? So you're saying...
I don't freak out.
You're not fearing a season of other.
No, I'm not freaking out by it, but to be honest, it's making me a lot more dependent versus just strategic. So part of me just wants to get strategic, go to a lot of events, write a lot of things, and be really incredibly strategic on it. And then I realized how simple Jesus did it. It really was love a few and then love them in such a way where they're going to love a few.
They'll be compelled to do the same.
So if they don't show up to my ministry, of course, we want to go where they're at, yada, yada, of course. But I realize the people that I do have, those people of peace, if you will, that are right around me, they're going to connect with people that I never will.
Yeah, they have access uniquely to groups
of
people that you
And then if they understand how I model to them that, like Jesus, it's just love a few in such a way where they know they're responsible to love a few who love them in such a way where they know that they're responsible. So the strategic piece is understand truly what Jesus did. Not try to, and yes, go after, there's all these different strategies, but doesn't freak me out, I think. And I think this probably is because my deepest, most intimate times with the Lord have been after epic failures. Mm. And for me, I look back on my story and I go, it was worth it to experience grace in that way. So I think about their stories and I don't freak out. I'd rather ask God, what are you up to in the life of these people right here? And how do I come alongside it? And then when they screw up, I'm not freaking out about it. I don't freak out about sin. I just go, God, what might you be doing through that? Hmm. And so that's how I'm looking at this entire generational problem is, God, what are you up to in this? How do I come alongside it?
I love that. Last question.
Okay.
Because we're 10 minutes in. This is like a hyper podcast.
I know.
What were you looking for when you were deciding where to lay your like future career in essence, because a lot of times I think as millennials, we're looking for hefty amounts of opportunity, significance. We want to make sure that like the lane we choose has zero end and in the widest potential. When you're choosing what ministry was going to look like for you, what are some of those keys that you were looking for? I imagine in an audience that's like, I'm thinking about double downing here, but man, it's a long road and it's not coming quick.
So I think everyone has a unique story. So when I say that, I'm just like everybody else, but my unique story is I've applied for one job ever, and that one job I didn't get.
Was that devastating?
Very. And I botched the interview.
Did you fail in the interview process?
Yes, I did. So I got brought in for the last, I'm sure I was in the last four or something. They asked me a question. I started crying, and they were praying for me in the interview.
Like
for a job where I would be ministering to others. Now, mind you, at the very end, I'm like, well, maybe that was just showing how dependent I am.
We're all needy.
So I have a unique story with regards to like, what do you say? I'll just say I read a book title. I didn't actually read the book. Some woman in the women's ministry world wrote a book called The Best Yes. Never read the book, but loved the title.
Okay.
Which basically is there's going to be a lot of yeses.
Ministered to you deeply just through the
just
title.
Through the title.
That's how powerful that book
Come
is.
Come on. You should probably read it. I haven't. But The Best Yes. You're going to get a lot of opportunities for yeses. Maybe. But then how do you find the best yes? And then recognize every yes is a no and every no is a yes. Mm. I didn't understand that. So I always heard like when you say yes to something, you're saying no to your family. But if you're saying yes or no to something, you can actually say yes to your family. And I always heard that balance. So I feel like in my season of life, it's being prayerfully discerning, asking the Lord. And I love when it doesn't make sense. So I'll go say yes to a big conference, which seems really obvious. But then I'll say yes to a zero pay event.
Yes.
Because discerning, that's the best yes for my soul.
That's really
It's not.
Great.
And so when people ask me, like, what's your standard for saying yes to this event or this or whatever? Or this job, I said yes to a part-time, two-day-a-week young adult pastor that in everyone else's world looked like a step back. Mm. I'm running a few different ministries, and then I say yes to this. My local church had a need, but that's the discerning best yes. And that best yes for my soul in the midst of standing on stages where people think you're assume you're the most spiritual person in the room, to then having to physically set up chairs for young adults who are transient and all that.
Of course.
It's probably one of the best yeses I've ever made.
I want to re-articulate this because it was such a powerful point.
Make it sound good.
No, you made it sound perfect. I just want to re-highlight it that to everybody else, it looked like a step backwards.
Yes.
And you have to be okay with that.
Yes.
Because you're not... Well, I should say this, in application, don't judge what God might be doing in your spirit by way of opportunity, by the way other people
perceive it,
right? Yeah. Where they're like, oh no, but why would you do that 2 days a week? It's a young adult. You're about to start a college.
Right.
You're speaking all over the nation. You've got a family. If that is clear enough between you and your maker, no matter how much perceived, whatever, advancement or retreat it is, like the Lord is able and capable to work through every single one of those.
And just the other day, I happened to have a conversation where I gave a quote that was really amazing, but it was in the midst of conversation, so I believe it was so genuine. But the quote was basically, I used to fear on missing out on something until I recognized when I was fearing missing out, I was ironically already missing out on my present moment.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, that's it. So my best yes is precisely where God has me. And then you have the prayerful discernment. We can have another podcast in 10 minutes one day. But learning to discern the voice of God, saying the best yes, and being confident if it's what he has for you, not what you think you should have for yourself.
Wow. I'll probably just leave it at that. Megs, thank you so much for wandering onto the bus.
Thank you for asking questions.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it. If people want to get a hold of you, if they want to track your...
Great.
Life, your story, if they want to see your gorgeous little kid or your super awesome husband, how do they do that?
They would. It's so weird. I don't know.
What do you want to promote? What do you want to promote?
You don't want to promote.
Okay. Then they just have to find Megan in the wild.
Find Megan in the wild. No, if we happen to cross paths, I would love to sit down and ask you 40 questions. That's what I want to do with my life. And I recognize the minutes, ironically, this not to demean that question, which is a great question.
Everyone's
and I
like,
should,
boo.
But.
Boo. No.
We know social media. Use a Google. Use Google.
Megan Fink.
But let me just say this. I'd rather get to know people. The following piece is so interesting, but if you follow me, I hope that it's following me to follow Christ. I want to discern what I do on social media, that it's not glorifying to myself, but it's hard. So with that question, with that question.
Answer.
Google if you want to figure out where I'm at so we can have a conversation. That's exciting. I feel like I just need to lean in.
Just get in there. Get in there. Awesome. Are you seeing this?
Flamingo, you're so cool.
Look at.
Wow.
Megs, thank you so much for your time. Even if it's a short 16, that's not short. Even if it's a short 16-minute convo, your heart matters, and I love that.
Thank you, Nito.
I pray there are 10,000 Megan Faiths in the making. I think we'd have an incredible church if we were so lucky to see just a fraction of your heart emerging in whatever generation is choosing to lean in right now.
Yeah.
So for our followers, love you guys. Share this conversation because I think it's worth for sharing. I know that like your space is sacred and it's always weird to be like, share. But sometimes there's something that rattles your bones and you wonder, you know what? I wonder if this will rattle somebody else's bones. That's the reason I asked.
Cool.
I'm ending this. Thanks for tuning in. Thank you to Saddleback Church and Purpose Driven Ministries.
I love you. How fun it is driven.
It is driven. You get the
It is driven indeed.
We are driving purpose everywhere.